the events of last week and to try to help us all figure out what they mean. And I really have to credit my producers because it's been a mad scramble from one day to the next to find guests. And there were plenty of days where one day we were looking at the next day and we weren't really sure what we were doing. So we've tried to do this in different sorts of ways, and it sort of feels like that, for the last more than 10 days, that's the only thing that we've talked about. Next week, we will be doing some other things, but we will also be doing some programs that are intended to try to discuss these issues. And I'm sure for a long, long time now, one way or another, we'll be talking about what happened last week and why and what it means. So, but this perhaps could be an opportunity, and people have actually done it. I'm really pleased that people have, on some of the focus programs we've done, have called in and shared their thoughts and feelings and asked questions. And sometimes, sometimes agreed with guests, sometimes really taken issue with guests, which is good. That's really what this show is all about. But not really quite so much as of a completely open forum as this. So it's a bit of an accident, but occasionally we do that, and sometimes turns out actually to be to work out very well because it is an opportunity for you to talk. If you have questions, comments about certainly about the coverage, about the way we've approached this, if there are particular points of view, perspectives, individuals that you think you would like to hear, you'd like to have us explore, we're open to suggestions. Of course, we always are, but particularly now. Of course, the thing that we try to say is that particularly if there's a particular person that you would like to hear from, be able to talk to, that's not always possible, although we certainly try, because many people are just for one reason or another can't give us an hour of their time at this time of the day. But we certainly will try. We're always willing. My producers have always said, "Well, I'll make the call. You tell me who you'd like me to call. I'll make the call, and we'll see what happens." So certainly we're very much open to suggestions about kinds of conversations that we can have on this show. But also it can be an opportunity here for you to express your own thoughts about what happened, what it meant to you, and where we go from here, essentially. So it can be completely wide open. The numbers, same as always, here in Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455. Also, we do have that toll-free line. That one's good anywhere that you can hear us around Illinois or Indiana. If it would be a long-distance call, that's the number to use. And that is 800-222-9455. So again, 333-WILL. And toll-free 800-222-WILL. And we have some folks here calling in. We'll get everybody lined up. We'll take them in the order that they came in, and we will, of course, take just as many people as we possibly can in the time that we have. We'll start out here. I've got somebody on a cell phone here on our line number one. Hello.
Yes, hello.
Yes.
I've got grave concerns about the rhetoric that's going around right now, trying to protect and preserve the integrity and the respect for the Islamic faith. The problem that I have is probably best underwritten by an American Arabian girl who spoke about persecution now, and I'm certainly not in favor of that. But one of the things that she said, as someone, I think, gave a politically correct line about their religion teaching peace, her response was chilling. She said, yes, our religion teaches us to respect those who respect us. That is such an incredible value. Whereas Christianity, though people don't always live up to it, teaches that we should love our enemies. Islam teaches that you should not love your enemies, that you should, in fact, do something about anyone who doesn't respect you. So when she said that her religion teaches them to respect those who respect them, the final conclusion as to who is respecting you and who is not is left subjectively up to the Islamic followers. It's this attitude that is the spawn of this entire problem. Do you understand what I'm saying?
Yeah, and I guess I can, not being Muslim, I can only, you know, hear what you're reporting and say that I'm not sure how to react to that, and I would only leave it to somebody who was Muslim to tell me whether they thought that was an appropriate reading of what Islam stands for or not.
You know, I agree with that, but I've been listening to and really studying Islam from outside for a long, long time. Mm. And even the best of it has a kind of a we are right, everybody else is wrong attitude. And even if they're willing to live and let live, they're generally speaking are only willing to do that in countries where they are not in the majority. Now, does it take very much of a rocket scientist to look around the world and find out what is going on in terms of civil rights and religious freedom in Islamically dominated countries? The answer to that is simply, there is no Islamically dominated country where there is true religious freedom. Even in Egypt, with one of the oldest Christian communities, 7 million Coptic Christians, they have come under extreme fire. People are actually converting to Islam not because they think it's the truth, but because they can't do business in their own homeland. This is something we would not tolerate here to happen even to the Islamic people. But it's one of those things. It's a catch-22. It's a religion that when you give religious freedom to it, given the opportunity, it will take religious freedom from everyone else. Now, that one you can study for yourself.
Well, again, I guess I have no basis to evaluate the statement one way or another. I don't know. There may indeed be people listening that will want to take issue with that. I guess my only comment would be is I'm not sure that to take your characterization that that people of this faith say I'm right and everybody else is wrong. I'm not so sure anybody has the corner on that market. There are Christians who would say I'm right and everybody else is wrong. You know, everybody when they go to war thinks that God's on their side. And I think that we just have to be rather careful in the kind of pronouncements we're making in such a sweeping way about a faith like Islam, where so many people practice it, so many different places around the world, and have different sort of approaches to it. I guess I would just say that I feel that we need to be very careful about how we talk about this.
Yeah, everyone feels the need to be very careful now about that. But there is, you know, the Christian sects who think they're right and everybody else is wrong are blowing up each other's buildings. The problem we have here is that somehow we have an entire civilization spawning a mentality that in a place like this puts them on the defensive, and in a place where they're in control puts them on the offensive. I'm not in favor of persecuting Islamic people. I really am not. I believe in freedom of religion, and I don't believe that we should target Arabs or Afghanis or anyone because of where they came from. Well, for that matter, there are many Christian Palestinians. I would hate to see them persecuted just because they happen to be Palestinian rather than anything else. I don't want to see them persecuted because they're Islamic. But I want to make the statement, at least it's heard, and thank you for letting me be heard,
sure,
that the problem isn't just that there's a few radical terrorists out there. The problem, and we're going to have to wake up and look at it one of these days because it's going to bite us hard again. The problem is that we are in a world conflict with an entire religious ideology that they, and even the best ones, you get an imam on here to defend his faith, I will guarantee you he will not tell you what is being preached in the pulpits of Islam around the world. He will tell you what he wants you to hear to put his religion in the best light. But there is another truth, and we're all hiding very carefully, trying not to offend anybody, and we don't want to talk about it. I think it needs to be discussed, and I think it needs to be discussed carefully, but I think we're playing a politically correct game, and what I'm hearing is not true. What I heard from the Arabian girl, now that's true. We respect those. We are taught by our religion to respect those who respect us, period.
Well, I got some other people to talk about. I'm interested in seeing what anybody else has to say and how they might react to your comments. So I appreciate your call.
Oh, I'm listening with every bated breath.
All right. Thank you very much. Well, let me just, explain what we're doing here this morning in this part of Focus 580, an impromptu open line. We had been planning on having a conversation with Benjamin Barber. He is the author of a number of books, has written a lot about politics and political thought. And he was one of those people that I think President Clinton really had respect and admiration for and had an opportunity to spend some time in the White House circle. And in fact, he's got a new book out that is a memoir of some of his experiences there, which is titled The Truth of Power, Intellectual Affairs in the Clinton White House. But we're also going to be talking about something else that he wrote about in a book that was published in 1995. It, in fact, grew out of an article that he wrote for The Atlantic magazine that was published in 1992, which looked at the conflict that he saw in the world between forces that he called tribalism and globalism. And unfortunately, it didn't work out to do it the way we had thought. And so we're going to see if we can get that show rescheduled for another day. But I know that there are a lot of folks who have a lot of things on their mind. So we thought maybe we'd just take this opportunity to open things up and give you a chance to say whatever you've got to say. Here in Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455, toll-free, 800-222-9455. We'll go to Lafayette, Indiana here, line number 4. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
Thanks for taking the call. I guess my comment or questions are sort of switching gears from what the previous caller had mentioned about ideology and so forth.
Uh-huh.
And I guess what I'm a little concerned with is, when I look at the cases that's being presented by the administration and by other world leaders, I don't necessarily consider that the Taliban's request for evidence or proof that Osama bin Laden is behind this conspiracy is that incredibly outrageous or unreasonable. Granted, I'm not going to be an apologist for the Taliban leadership, but had this been just a simple extradition hearing of some kind, I would have presumed that if we were to have an extradition from even one of our allies, that some degree of evidence would need to be presented. Maybe that has been the case, but we haven't really seen a whole lot of direct linkage to Osama bin Laden. And for something as large as conspiracy, there is traditionally a burden of proof. I think, for example, back to when the man went on the interstate killing spree at the synagogues and went down to Bloomington, the name Matthew Hale came up.
Mm-hmm.
And yet, you know, the conspiracy to Matthew Hale was never really proven. Now, Matthew Hale as an individual is certainly at least as shady a character, if not, well, certainly not as shady perhaps as Osama bin Laden, but does that necessarily rise to the burden of proof? And I guess I'm not saying that we shouldn't pursue this. I just think that at least in as far as public opinion, not only in the United States but in the world, I think we should still consider that proof, if civilization is indeed under attack, that we need to at least consider that.
Mm-hmm. Well, it certainly seems that the administration thinks they can make the case. Maybe they can't make the case today.
Mm-hmm.
But I guess the question is, are they willing to wait to take action to the point where they feel they actually can make the case?
Right. And I hope that they have this evidence, and I think given the level of the stakes involved, that the public is entitled to at least some of that information. Now, I know a lot of people will say, for example, that to reveal some of the evidence might be endangering the lives of others, and I can certainly respect that. However, I know that some of the investigation has involved the seizure of assets and bank records, which, you know, that's pretty well known that those seizures have taken place. I don't think that the paper trail, for example, is necessarily going to jeopardize any people on the ground. And if some of that were revealed, I'd be a little less skeptical.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm still, I suppose, given the state of affairs of the FBI in the last year, losing hard drives, weapons, not turning over documents, I'm not so sure I want to reinstate full trust automatically to the organization. And I guess that's all I should say on that subject. I'll probably get beat up for saying this,
Well, and it seems to be the case that the administration is thinking that the most of the American people will, their patience only goes to a certain point, and that at a certain point they're going to expect the administration to do something. And there, I guess, is yet another question: how many people would be willing to say, "Okay, we'll wait until there is conclusive evidence. You can make the case that this person is responsible." And I don't have an answer. I'm only saying that that's a question. I don't have an answer.
I put you in an impossible position, I suppose. But
well, again, I much appreciate your comments.
All right, thank you.
We'll come back here to someone locally. It's this line 2, and it's Urbana. Hello.
Yes, I'm calling because I want to know what the jihad, what does that mean? Are they a group of people? What? Does anybody know? Do you know? Does any listening audience know?
Well, I am not an expert on this. Jihad is an Arabic word, and it means holy war. That's the way that I have most often seen it translate it. Now, I would have to leave this to an expert on the history of the Middle East or the history of Islam to explain further exactly what that means. But it does not. Now, there are various kinds of groups that have incorporated that word into the name of their group. But that's what it is. It does not refer to a specific doesn't refer to a specific person or persons.
How do you spell that?
J-I-H-A-D.
J-I-H-A-D.
Yeah, that's correct. Okay. And I'm sure that if you could go to Encyclopedia Britannica or some kind of general source, I suppose, and see what it would say.
But you think most likely it means holy war.
That is my understanding of what it means in a sort of a very blunt kind of literal way. But I'm sure that there are shadings of meaning that are more delicate and nuanced than that. And I would have to leave that to somebody who truly was an expert to be able to answer a question like
that. Well, I hope somebody calls and answers that.
Sure.
Thank you.
All right. We'll go here to line 3. This is also Urbana. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
I wasn't going to call, but I think I have to say something about the first caller's comments.
Yes.
I won't presume to speak for Islam, but I think we can examine Islam's history. And from the 7th century of our time to at least the early part of this century, Islam was a far more tolerant civilization than was Western civilization. When Spain drove the Jews out of Spain, where did they go? They went to Islam, and they were accepted and honored and protected. Throughout most of that period, Jews, Christians, and Muslims lived in harmony in the Middle East, except when we intervened, of course, with our crusades.
Mm-hmm.
They haven't been perfect. I'm afraid we haven't been. And as to all of the terror and related events that have been taking place, and we've had quite a few in this country, I'm afraid I have to say that a majority of them were perpetrated by members of our more fundamentalist Christian religious groups, if you think most of them were actually directed at abortion clinics and such. And I'm certainly not going to attempt to tar and feather Christian fundamentalism, because that is not typical of them, any more than the event of the past, better than a week ago now, was typical of most of Islam.
Mm. Well, I think it's fair to say, yesterday we had this conversation with Martin Marty, who is a very well-known religious historian, who was part of a multi-year study involving a lot of people looking at religious fundamentalism, or as he would say, maybe more correct, fundamentalisms, because it's not just one thing. And I think that he would say that it was the case in every case that fundamentalism or fundamentalists were not typical of the faith from which they come, that they were, particularly the most extreme, were a minority view in every case.
May I speak to the word jihad?
Yes, please.
It is exactly as you defined it, except it can also be used figuratively. And it's very much like our word crusade, except the semantic loadings are exactly inverse for the two peoples.
Hmm.
As we hear the word concept of jihad, crusade in the Middle East is thought of as those horrible people who came in and slaughtered us in the Middle Ages.
Hmm.
And actually, the two words are very similar. Crusade is a holy war that can be either figurative or literal.
Hmm.
So I think we have to think about that. Well, I've said enough.
Well, thanks for the comment on that. I think that helps.
Thank you.
All right. We're already at our midpoint here. This morning, we weren't able to do the program that we had planned. These things do indeed happen sometimes. We make our plans, and then sometimes things go awry. We were planning on talking with Benjamin Barber, and we hope to do that perhaps next week. Occasionally, there are confusions in communication when we set up these programs. Sometimes I think, you know, the fact that we do 10 interviews every week and that most of the time things work the way they're supposed to, that rather amazes me, actually. So we thought, well, this would be a good opportunity just to open up the phone lines and encourage you to say whatever is on your mind. What are you thinking about right now? And also, as far as what we do here goes, if there are particular ways that you would like us to try to approach this, certain kinds of perspectives that you're not hearing, certain kinds of people that you would like to hear from, certain kinds of background, for example, and not very long ago, it seemed that people who were listening really said they needed to know more about Afghanistan. So we tried to do that, and I expect we'll probably be talking more about that in the future. So whatever's on your mind, 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. By the way, I'd like to mention if there are people who are curious about Islam and what Muslims think and what they don't and how people here in our community who are Muslim are reacting to the events of the last 10 days. There will be an open house, including special prayers and an informational discussion session at the Central Illinois Mosque and Islamic Center. This will be taking place this weekend on Sunday afternoon between 1 and 3. And the Mosque and Islamic Center is located at 106 South Lincoln in Urbana. And they say anyone is invited. People are certainly, people of goodwill and of all faiths are welcome to come together. And if you're interested in stopping by and talking with the folks there, I think that you should certainly feel welcome. They say in the release about this event, they say, as we all try to work our way back to some kind of normalcy, we at the Central Illinois Mosque and Islamic Center are inviting the university administrators, faculty, clergy, and general community to this open house. So there is the invitation. Again, Sunday afternoon from 1 to 3 at the Central Illinois Mosque and Islamic Center. We have other folks here listening. We'll just continue to give them a chance to speak. Here is Aurora, line number one. Hello.
Yeah, I call very hesitantly. You said something about speaking about what is on your mind, and these are issues that are on my mind. Why did our CIA, even though being told 3 weeks ago that something like this might happen, they didn't say exactly, but they gave us a warning. Why weren't we more aware of this, or were they aware, but they didn't find what these people were talking about, saying what would happen? And the other thing I don't understand, since this building was already bombed, what was it, in 95?
Hmm.
Mm-hmm. Why wasn't there an alarm system? Some of those people didn't know. I mean, they were frantic and they ran. But I began to think, do other tall buildings have alarm systems that go off and tell everybody automatically evacuate? And then the last thing I thought about after Bush's speech last night, will this divide the world into two parts? And that's, I don't know if there are any answers for anything I said, but this is what has been going on in my mind.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you so much.
Well, thanks. The first question that the caller raises certainly is an important one, and I know that people in all over the country are asking that question. And there are going to be hearings in Congress looking at that very question, why we didn't have more warning of this. So I would expect that it would be something that there would be a lot more discussion in the future of. The second question, I think, is an interesting one. And I guess now I would expect that anyone who works in a high-rise office building or lives in a building like that has now thought about this. What do they do if there's some kind of emergency and they have to get people out of the building? And that's a question that I honestly, again, don't know. Maybe the most difficult and the biggest question is the third. And again, I don't know. Other folks are welcome to reflect, though. We'd certainly encourage that. And we have time for, you know, to get in a number of other callers. So call us and share what you're thinking about. 333-9455. That's for Champaign-Urbana. Toll-free, 800-222-9455. We have someone calling from Edgar County. They're the next, line number two. Hello.
Yeah, hello. I don't know about anybody else, but last night was the best night's sleep I've had since September 11th. And I think our president last night was resolute, but he was also reassuring. And I think the best line from the speech was something to the effect that these times will not define our country, but our country will define its times. And one other thing that surprised me after the attacks, I didn't feel like praying, which really surprised me. Hmm. And I just had no desire. I had a feeling like, gee, you know, what's the use? Is anybody listening? You know, I thought if prayer worked, maybe this incident wouldn't have happened in the first place.
So. Well, that's another way. It's another one of those things that for people of faith, when you have a crisis, what does it mean? I don't know. I know that certainly a lot of people seem to have drawn consolation from their faith.
Right.
And I, you know, maybe there will be some people who will say that their faith was shaken, and I wouldn't blame them for feeling that way. So your feeling on that score hasn't. Would you have thought that you were a particularly religious person before?
Not necessarily, but. You know, on occasion I do pray, and but it was something totally unexpected. You know, sure, I went through the whole gamut of emotions that I'm sure most people did, but this was something that really caught me off guard. I found myself, you know, with really no desire to even try to communicate, you know, to pray. So mm-hmm. I don't know if anybody else experienced that. But anyway, thanks. Thank you for taking the call.
Sure. Well, thanks for the call. We appreciate it, and we'll just keep on going. It's Urbana next, line number three. Hello.
Hi. I am actually calling in response to a couple of questions that were asked earlier in this program.
Yes.
I am a Muslim, so though I am not a religious scholar, but I just wanted to go over a couple of things.
Yes.
One thing is word jihad. Word jihad is an Arabic word. The origin of this word is from another Arabic word called juhad, which means struggle. Now, this jihad is basically means a struggle. Now, this struggle has much broader meanings than just war.
Hmm.
This struggle means struggle in writing, struggle with speech, struggle with arguments, and struggle with war as well. So, like, it has much broader meaning. Like, for example, if somebody says that I want to do jihad, that would also include a struggle with the speech or in writing, arguments, discussion, and those kind of things. So I think jihad is much more a broader term than just one word, war or holy war. So that is one my one comment on, on the word jihad. The second thing is about tolerance in Islam. I think one other caller actually very eloquently described or told about the way Muslims have behaved throughout their history, and they have been found to be much more tolerant. But we can look at three actually different aspects. One, let me make a little background. Every Muslim, it doesn't matter whether he belongs to Sunni sect or a Shia sect, agree on two things, that all their teachings are derived from Holy Book, which is Quran, and from the teachings and life of the Prophet. From the life of the Prophet, what we understand from tolerance is that Prophet was and his companions were forced to migrate from Mecca to Medina. When Prophet conquered Mecca, there were all those people who had committed atrocities in the past on him and on his companions. But when he conquered Mecca, he told to his fighters who were with him that do not kill any animal, do not damage any plant, do not kill women or children, and do not kill any man who does not come with an intent of fight towards you. So, like, and there were, Mecca was conquered without any fight. And later on, he forgave all those people one by one. They came in front of him, and he forgave all those people who had committed all different kind of atrocities and forced him and his companions to leave their birthplace. The second, so this is just one part from the life of Prophet. The second aspect is from the history, and that part is actually very nicely described by another person who called, that is that throughout the history we see that Muslims have ruled areas where there were majority of other religions as well. If we just go out of Middle East, let's say in subcontinent, Muslims ruled for more than 700 years. And still, if you see whole of the subcontinent, there are more people from other religions than from Islam. So Muslims still were minority even after 700 years of rule. Now, coming towards the tolerance today, in most of the, I have no experience about other countries, but I am basically from Pakistan. So I can tell about experience that I have seen over there. Whenever there is something that people have sentiments against, let's say, America or another country, they are not at all directed towards Christians. While they can simply say that, okay, in America, because there is majority of Christians and this thing happened, so this also is a fault of Christians as well, because there are more Christians that live in America than any other religion. But this never happens. I had two neighbors while I was living in Pakistan who were Christians, and we were at very good terms with them. Actually, during Christmas or at Eid, we used to exchange gifts, and there was not at all, and I used to play with their kids, and my parents never stopped me, and their parents never stopped their kids. So it was very much like you would find a neighborhood relationship over here were present where I grew up. So I cannot comment about what is the situation in other parts of the world, but I can at least tell about what I saw and felt and noticed in Pakistan.
Very good. Well, I certainly appreciate your calling and adding your thoughts, and also to help, again, clarify the meaning of the word jihad. I appreciate it very much. Thank you. We have, here I should just say that we have about 10 minutes left in this part of Focus 580. We have a number of callers, and we'll try to get in as many people as we can. We just launched this morning into an impromptu open line just because the program that we had planned didn't quite work out. But we hope to get back to that topic And I'm sure that one way or another, we'll be talking about these issues for a long time now to come. And we'll try to give you many opportunities to do that here on the show with various kinds of guests. And as also, as I said, we're open to suggestions about guests and topics and strategies. People can make that suggestion by phone, but of course, you know, you can always drop us a note, send us a postcard, send us an email, call the listener comment line, you know, what have you. We'll try and go on and talk with some other folks here, and I think our next caller would be in Champagne, I think, line number one. Hello.
Hello?
Yes.
Hi. I was wondering, I didn't hear all the comments of the previous caller, but I wanted to make a comment on the term jihad. I'm not sure how much he explained that. I apologize.
A little bit, but I'm sure you can add to our understanding by going and, you know, telling us some more. What the two callers had been trying to suggest is that there are a number of shades of meaning here, and that as it's generally, in my experience, gets translated as something like holy war, I think the callers were trying to point out that it has meanings that are more metaphorical, and that it doesn't just mean a war. It can mean a war, but it can also mean a struggle that would be an intellectual struggle, or maybe a spiritual struggle. So that's it. That's what it. It doesn't necessarily mean hand-to-hand combat, although I guess it can. So you can add whatever you like.
Yeah. Well, what I wanted to say was that if you look at it, the term jihad from a Quranic perspective, mm-hmm. it really is translated literally more so as struggle or striving more so than war. And in fact, when you look at the text, it says that the higher jihad is the jihad of the spirit, the jihad of the mind. And unfortunately, you know, we have some of the fanatical Muslims running around that have kind of like taken the term, just like one of the previous callers said, you know, where you take the term crusade and you have the two meanings that you can have. You can have the war, but then you can have like a crusade of an issue, a crusade of a social agenda. And it's the same thing with jihad. I mean, jihad is supposed to primarily designate the personal struggle. You find this a lot in the esoteric aspect of Islam known as Sufism, where the jihad is always about one striving to get oneself closer to Allah or to the Creator. And I just think it's important for people to know that, because once again, I don't think we should allow the fanatical Muslims to basically define the terms of what we're trying to deal with here. I think we have to, you know, on one hand, you know, respect the history of what they're angry about. I mean, you know, because I think that, you know, in certain ways, the struggle between Islam and the West is 1,000 years old, and it's come in many different forms. And I think that's one thing people don't understand. They kind of look at what happened in New York as this very singular action. It's just like, no, you know, people have been kind of irate, you know, at least since the 50s, at least since, you know, we had the CIA getting involved in Iran and the overthrow of Mossadegh. And, you know, there's all kinds of things that have gone on in terms of the power struggle. But, you know, just getting back to the term jihad and other terms that people will hear, I think, during this time, I think it's important for people to really educate themselves about what Islam really means and what these terms mean, because jihad is supposed to be like a beautiful thing. It's not supposed to be this term where we say, okay, we will commit jihad upon you. You know, that's more like a childish, kind of pedantic, kind of a reactionary use of the word, which is just really not the ultimate designation for what it's supposed to mean. And that's all I needed to say. Thanks a lot.
Yeah. No, I appreciate that you're adding your comments, because certainly my understanding was, now I realize, rather superficial. So I'm glad to have I'm glad to have that explanation.
Oh, it was my pleasure.
We appreciate it. Let's go to Bloomington's line number four. Hello.
Good morning, David.
Yes, sir.
Talking about the crusade, I'm glad that Bush is not using that anymore. Apparently, he didn't understand that the word crusade itself comes from cross, the same root word of cross, which is the Christian symbol.
Well, I did not know that, so you're telling me something that I did not know.
That's where the word came from. And there's something else that's been bothering me. Early on, Bush was talking about that his administration was going to fight and eradicate evil. he was talking about evil and equating that with what has taken place. I certainly agree that that was evil, but eradicating evil is going to take an awful long time. The religions of the world have been trying to do that for thousands of years and haven't done it yet. Now, Bush is talking about his administration doing these things, eradicating this and that and the other, and particularly the eradicating evil.
Mm-hmm.
There is no way that he could tie the hands of any successor of his. So what is he thinking? Is he planning on becoming president for life?
Well, I think you point to a real dilemma, and that is that the administration has, and that is over-promising, no matter whatever it is they're promising. I mean, even if we set aside the term evil, even if we look at his promise to eradicate terrorism, I'd say that that's I wouldn't make a promise like that. I don't think anybody could fulfill it. I think he has to be careful what sort of expectations he raises in people's minds and be realistic about what can and can't be achieved. So I mean, I agree with you. No, I don't think I don't believe his administration or any administration is going to eradicate evil from the face of the earth. That's why one has to be so careful about the kind of language that you use. I think one's moved to extremes of rhetoric, and by the stress and the passion of the moment. But I think maybe in part you're suggesting is, watch what you promise.
Yeah. Well, thank you very much, Dave.
All right. Thank you. Let's go on to, this is line number one, Southern Illinois. Hello.
Yes.
Yes. Hello.
I wanted to make a comment on exactly what you're saying on the rhetoric that Mr. Bush is using, which is pretty unclear on sometimes, exalting people to act in an irrational manner. He said, you are with a terrorist or you are with us.
Mm-hmm.
What does that mean? I'm with neither one. I'm not with a terrorist. I am not with us because we are not doing the right thing either to the world. So, I like your comment about that.
Well, I hear what you're saying. It seems to be very hard to find what is there some third way here for people who say, of course, this was a terrible act, that it was wrong, that nothing could justify it, and at the same time, then what do you do? And I think that there are probably some, even though opinion polls and say that 80% or something of Americans are backing what the president is talking about doing, I think that there are some people that are really afraid of what's likely to happen, and really worried about not knowing what the right thing to do is. And it seems that it's hard for people like that to know where exactly to go, where to place themselves. As I'm sure that you feel that you're a good American, that you believe in this country and the things that it stands for. But at the same time, it sounds like you're really struggling, to use that word we've talked about here this morning, with what the right thing to do is, and that you don't know, and I don't know. It's very hard to talk about it in a way that obviously it's the president's job, part of the president's job, to assure people and to look like he's in control. But I don't know. I guess personally, I'm worried. I'm worried about what's going to happen. I'm worried about what this country is going to do, and how it's all going to play out in the future. So I guess I'm not. I don't know if that's a very good answer to the question that you posed, but I don't think that you're the only person that feels that you're really not sure what to feel.
It's like she's not given a choice. She says you are with the terrorist or you are with us, one or the other. I don't like either way that we are or they are acting, and I think I have the choice to say that. And as an American, I have the choice to say how I feel and not to have somebody to tell me, no, that's not so. You know, that we are Americans and we are going to kill them. I mean, we are not in a football game here. Hmm.
Well, you certainly have the right to say how you feel. And I guess I would think that, you know, one thing that it would be more important than ever at a time like this, if people have very strong feelings about what's the right thing to do, that they be in touch with their representatives in Congress, in Washington, their congressmen, their senators, and tell them what they think. I think that this, if any time that it was important, this is now the time for everybody, no matter what it is that they think, whether they think, you know, whether they think we should go to war, whether they think we should not go to war, you know, whatever, for
but
them really
saying,
to be heard.
We go to war against who? There's a guy that is hiding in the caves in Afghanistan who we think he is there. We don't know. Is he stuck in there or not? And then we are putting all those people around Afghanistan in danger, and they're scared to death. And what are we doing? We think he's the one doing this.
Well, I appreciate your comments, and I'm afraid that we're going to have to stop here
right now.
Thank
you for letting me talk.
We've used the time,
okay.
And we have some other people here that we can't take. But we're going to continue, as I say, talking about this various ways with guests. We may have some more time to do some more open line, and certainly I would always encourage you as you're listening to the show to call in with your comments, if you agree with the guest, if you disagree with the guest, whatever, that you need to make yourself heard. And I want to say thanks very much to all the folks who called in to contribute their thoughts.